Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 111th episode of the Manor Podcast. I'm your co-host, Roger Bodie, joined as always with my best friend and other co-host, Michael Hamilton. Michael, what a weekend, man. What a world. I just can't believe, you always dream of it, right? You show up to a day of a tournament and you're like, I'm just never going to lose today. I'm just going to have a perfect draft pod. I'm just going to crush my sealed. And I finally got to live that dream. I finally just never lost a game on a whole day of a tournament. I was rolling in tickets. I had so thousands of tickets by the end of Sunday. I was so ticket rich. I got so many promos. I got so many packs of cute bunny rabbit Bloomborough packs to open. I'm just living it up over here with tickets.
Yeah, all the prep for the Arena Open finally paid off this weekend, huh?
Yeah, I also threw out was that my first or second Rosetta draft of all time? I think that was my first Rosetta draft. I threw out it. I drafted Acilio. My deck was sick. On turn zero, I went the zero cost lightning where your next lightning attack. I should probably pull up the spoilers because I still don't know the name of the cards. Let me pull this up. Fabrary.net. Spoilers. I know I could explain to you the mechanics of all the cards I played. I just don't know the actual names of them. Let's see here. It was Electrostatic Discharge. Your next attack action you play this card costs one less, gets going, or plus three power. Yeah. Then it was paired with a red Flittering Charge. So that was for seven. And then I flashed in a Sigil of Lightning. And then I got to amp for three for free. And I came in with, which one was it? I was a trailblazing either, but I didn't need to go again. But still, it was like 13 damage on turn one, split between physical and arcane. It was sick. I loved it.
Yeah, and you get the little embodiment carryover from the Sigil of Lightning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good deck.
I think Acilio does some pretty powerful things when you've got the good cards.
Yeah, amping three for free felt pretty good. Mm-hmm. Did you do anything on Sunday?
So. I played a lot of Flesh and Blood. So I did three drafts on Sunday. I drafted Verdance, Verdance is sweet. I really like the Earth cards. I went 3-0 with Verdance. Then my second draft, I drafted Florian. I lost to a very good Verdance deck in the hands of Michael Dalton. He's very good at Flesh and Blood. Took me down, but I won my other two rounds. And then in my third draft that I was drafting, you know, because I was at the tournament drafting. I drafted Aurora. I first picked Burn Up Shock, which I think is the best Aurora card below Majestic Rarity. Her Majestic specialization might be better for her. There might be some cards I don't know super well yet because I haven't played a lot of the constructed format. But in Limited, Burn Up Shock, very, very, very good. I first picked it, and Lightning was not super cutoff, so I was Aurora. And I learned from these drafts that when I'm not drafting Acilio, great. When I am drafting Acilio, I am so sad. I don't know how to make that hero work.
Really?
Really.
So in my opening pool, and I think last week we were talking about our expectations for this format. And I was like, I have no idea how to play Acilio. Like, he is just such like an enigma wrapped in a mystery and a whole shell of things that I can't even comprehend. And I show up to the world premiere and I open my first ever seal pool in the format. And I look at it, I'm like, I get how to play Acilio. This is an Acilio pool. I see. And it's very much exactly like I told you, where you want like at least two lightning sigils, at least two. You could probably do three, but four sigils overall. And then you want to pair that with good go again lightning attacks, shocking. And then the most important cards are the rare glyph overlay, which is deal X plus three damage, where X is the number or permanents you control with sigil in their name. And when you surge it, you shuffle all your shuffles back into your, or shuffle all your sigils back into your deck that are in play. So you get their leave effect when they leave and you gain a life. It combined with Etchings of Arcana, which is deal three arcane damage for zero, but surge, if this deals more than three damage, you may turn an aura with sigil in its name from your graveyard to your hand. So it's basically like drawing a full extra card. And then you could either Arsenal that Sigil, or if it's a Sigil Lightning, or you could just play it immediately, depending on like what you want to be doing with the rest of your turn. And I call it Sigil dancing, because so basically you just want to constantly like lightning play a Sigil, so you're amping for like 2 to 3 for free playing a surge thing. And that was just kind of like this cool looping play pattern. And I went 3-1 in the world premiere, and I only lost to this card. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called like Germinate or something. It makes like a couple rune chance in endgame sometimes, but mm-hmm. It seemed pretty good.
Yeah, I actually am intimately familiar with Germany. I think I've done a total of 6 drafts now, which is definitely quite up there in terms of the set being not released yet. And in 2 of them, I have had Germinate in my deck. And in those 2 drafts, I lost 1 game with Germinate
I would believe in my deck.
And none of those were games that went long. The game I lost, I just kind of got ran over. It was the game I lost to Michael Dalton that I talked about earlier, where he played really well. He had a really good deck. He just shot me with 3 to 4 arcane damage every turn, and I died.
Was he on Verdant or Acilio?
He was on Verdant.
Mm. Yeah, I imagine Verdant wants a similar play pattern, potentially. I don't know. I feel like Harp game plan makes a little bit more sense, like I guess in like a straightforward way, where you just pitch the Earth card, you come in with like your 0 for 3, you get the surge effect, hopefully, and then you get your Embodiment of Lightning, and then if you have more wizard cards in your deck, Embodiment of Earth, having that Embodiment of Earth lets your wizard class cards that all block for 3, I think, except for maybe the Sigil, that block for 4.
There's the Amp 3 card. I can't remember the name of, like, Exploding Aether or something.
That
one blocks 2. I hate that card. I was drafting Verdant. There was like 3 cards in the pack. One was an Exploding Aether. One was like a yellow block 3, and I snapped up the yellow block 3.
I don't mind 1 in red if you can, mm-hmm. and then basically pitch stacking it with like a, so you pitch like it and like a blue wizard spell that deals arcane damage, and then like in an end game sometimes it just like wins the game on the spot because your opponent just can't deal with like 4 to 5, or if you pitch it with like a red 2/2 on top of it, like 6 arcane damage in the end game usually just wins the game on the spot.
Yeah, but it costs so much to like pitch a red back into your deck. You have to really be not like the times that I'm looking to pitch a red are when I draw all reds and I need to pay a resource or something, or when my opponent either doesn't do anything or sends arcane damage I can't interact with, then I can just like overpitch it and put it back in. But I don't really want to put a card that is the only time it's good into my deck.
Yeah. That's what I did that on turn 0. I think I pitched it to the macro card.
Sanctuary of Aria.
Yeah.
And it's Aria. Sanctuary of something.
Yeah. I pitched it to Sanctuary. And yeah, Sanctuary of Aria. And then I came all the way back around to my pitch stack. I drew that card without a card, the arcane damage spell, killed my opponent. And I was like, so my pitch stack mattered. The way I played the game mattered. All my decisions throughout the game mattered. The value that I got on turn to turn, like cycles, my game plan was consistent. I felt like I executed it well. This format's sick. This is like goated format. And then my 2 rounds later, my opponent played a Germinate and I lost the game on the spot. And I posted my Twitter take of this format is just a wild roller coaster. It feels like, man.
Yeah, I think that I really like this format at the common and rare rarity level. I think they all have interesting uses, like when you want to sideboard certain cards in, what cards certain heroes want. And I think that it's really good. I think the sealed format, maybe not quite as good as the draft, because I think that there's just like the earth is, you get so much earth when you get to open 8 packs that you can just really easily decompose with only playing the good decompose cards a lot of the time. But I think that my biggest gripe with this format is some of the Majestics are like really, really, really pushed.
Yeah.
I'd bump Burn Up Shock in there as well with being similar power level to some of the Majestics. And I think Florian's Arcane Seeds Life and the Earth Wizard one. Verdance's, I can't remember the name, something life. All the rare split cards and even the Comet Storm Shock, I think, is solid too. I think all the rare split cards and a lot of the Majestics are just really, really, really powerful.
Yeah. So Were you talking about rampant growth life? That's the amp X, where amp is the total life you've gained. She also has heartbeat of candle hold, which is just gain one, and then pulsing aether, which is the deal four.
Yeah, pulsing aether life, I think. Well, both those majestics that you mentioned are quite good as well. Mm. But specifically the smelled rares are probably the only rares that feel like you're doing something really, really unfair, I guess.
Yeah. Channel Millennium Tree can be pretty unfair too.
Yeah. Yeah. Experience. That's a majestic. But at majestic level, a lot of the cards feel like completely broken. Getting Fell of the Crowned, I think it's just a 3/8 that also takes a card from you. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, been there.
2/8 that kills a card. That's, I think, Cadaverous Tilling is one of the best commons in the format. And Fell of the Crown is the same thing. It just also takes a card from you.
Yeah. So there's an interesting thing here, Michael, where all the cards we just talked about are all either elemental or these split cards. What about the class cards? Are there any, like, all the class cards feel fine, right?
So I think the biggest thing about the class cards is if you want to block three, you need to be taking some class cards. There's Heaven's Claw and Autumn's Touch that block three in elements. But other than that, I don't think there's anything at common that blocks for three. And then the split cards all block for three at rare, but I think they're also probably the only
unless they're instance for three.
Well, all the rare split cards are non-attack action instant combos. So
oh yeah. Okay,
you're right. But the majestic ones don't all. They do different things.
But. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I was talking about cards like Snuff Out, Machina. That's the 1/5. When it hits, you may destroy an aura you control. If you do, they discard a card. Machinations of Dominion, which is just like a really fancy Maverin Skies, which is your next Runeblade action card. Attack this turn, gets overpower. And you played or create an aura turn, it gets go again. I had succumbed to temptation in my seal pool. People were freaking out about it. It was the fanciest crack bobble I'd ever played in my life because rune blades aren't great at consistently dealing arcane damage. So I never actually had it turned on to do anything ever.
I think you can combine it with the gloves for pretty powerful effect. The gloves that make a rune chant.
I tried that. Did not really do very much. Cause, There are ways to prevent the rune chance, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah.
And then we look to like the wizards, and it's like Destructive Aether Tide, which is like, it's just the blue surge destroyed arsenal. Pretty good. Internal Inferno, which is the 1/4 surge. You can play it again, but like, how are you getting action points in limited?
Yeah, you really have to use flash with that, basically.
Yeah, but like none of these majestics in the class are really all that pushed. They are like, they're good, they're solid, but I think they're about on power level with, you know, the rares or, you know, a lot of the other.
Yeah. I agree. The non-elemental majestics are, I think, good and worth picking. And a lot of the time they're going to be one of the better cards in your deck, but you're right. The element majestics are the ones that are really, really pushed.
Yeah. And I think we can even go a step further where all the element cards are the ones that are even really, really pushed, because all of the earth, you know, you were talking about Cadaverous Tilling and things like at rare, you have cards like Earthform, Rootbound Carapace. These are all really, really solid cards. Fruits of the Forest, Strength of the Four Seasons. Very, very powerful cards at like common rare right there. And Lightning, you have the first actual 0/6 they printed with the Electromagnetic Somersault.
You gotta jump through a lot of hoops to make that a 0/6.
Yeah, but like a 0/6, it has a lot of applications, and I just think it's a really strong card.
I do agree it is strong.
And then all the Lightning common cards, I feel like are for the most part really good. I think Flittering Charge, the one that you played instant gets go again, good card. Fry, the 0/3 go again, good card. Lightning Surge, we know is a good card.
Yeah.
Second Strike, when this attacks, we have to damage this turn, it gets +1 and go again. I think that's a good card. Trip the Light, fantastic. I actually love this card in blue. I think it's like probably my favorite blue in the set because you don't feel bad pitching it. And when you come across it in the end games, it's exactly when you want to be preventing arcane damage the most. It's when the Earth Hero's abilities to deal arcane damage is going to be turned on the most. So it's like just a really, really solid card for end games, I feel like.
Sure. That makes sense. I also like the red. I think a 1 for 5 is fine.
Yeah, for sure.
It's great when you have an embodiment with Aurora already or from the sigils from Acilio, Sigil of Lightnings. But I think it's great when you have those. And with Aurora, it fits the curve really nicely where you can just like pitch a blue play and make a embodiment of lightning for the next turn.
Yeah. And I guess my concern is that it feels like when drafting this format, it's just going to be in the order of take the element cards, then take the class cards, and there's not really a good reason to deviate from that order, right?
Well, I think it just depends on what cards you're seeing, because the element cards, like, yes, the best element cards are for the most part better than the best class cards, but maybe once you get down a peg where it's like not the cream of the crop element cards, it's like maybe the yellows or some of the weaker reds or some of the weaker blues, and you're comparing those to like the premium class card, suddenly it's like an interesting choice where like, do you want the premium class card or do you want the slightly worse elemental card? Even like yellow Cadaverous Tilling, which I think is a 3 for 7 most of the time when you're doing the thing, it's a great decompose card. There are class commons or generic commons that I might take over. For example, I think Red Finals Fighting Spirit is still a bomb, one of the best cards in the set, and I'm taking that over almost every common element card.
Yeah. Arcane Polarity at red especially as well is something that I'm always interested in.
Yeah.
I was shocked when I saw that card. I was like, this card's gas. Like, I remember also on last week's episode talking about how I was worried that, I don't know, man, Lightning Heroes, it feels like we're just going to be blasting each other and games are going to be 2 turns long. Here we are 1 week later. I'm like, oh yeah, this is just a fatigue format. It's like, oh, okay. That was not the direction I was expecting this set to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think a big part of that is sealed. In draft, I think like a lot of the Earth Mirrors do go to fatigue, not all of them, but a chunk of them. But in sealed, because you get 8 packs of the Earth stuff, and the Earth stuff is a lot more interchangeable, and it can turn on your hero ability with like the yellow decompose cards. Whereas for the lightning stuff, you really just want like a high quantity of premium red attacks to not have enough damage to get over the finish line. Basically, mm-hmm. It's a lot harder to have that in a sealed than it is just have like a pile of 3 blocks and some Earth stuff with decompose.
Yeah, for sure.
Whereas in draft, things actually flip a little bit where I think like a lot of the Earth heroes are not having the quantity of 3 blocks they want because the 3 blocks are contested. Everyone wants 3 blocks because 3 blocks are good, and you get 3 packs per person and everyone's taking 3 blocks out of them. You're not getting 8 packs worth of 3 blocks anymore.
I was hearing that a lot of people felt that the ideal distribution for a draft pod though is 5 or 3 lightning. Do you think you agree with that?
I think more testing is needed. In the top 8 of the calling that we just played in, the top 8 distribution was 3 Aurora, 3 Florian, 1 Verdance, 1 Acilio. So it was 4-4 elements. And I think my deck was as good as, I played against 3 Earth Heroes, and I think my deck was as good as all 3 of theirs. Pretty.
Then why didn't you win?
Well, Lucas played very well, but there was a turn near the end of the game that I think if you watch the game, you can kind of see my reaction when I realized this giant mistake I made, where he has an Arcane Cussing in play. I believe that's his name. You take damage on my or if I deal damage to you on my turn, basically it goes away and doesn't do anything. And if it's the short on your turn, then you get 3 rune chance. So we're down to not near the end of the game. Well, it became near the end of the game because I threw away the game basically that turn. But I have my copy of Burn Up Shock in hand, which is the best card in my deck, probably the best card in most Aurora decks that have access to it. And I have also. I don't have a good offensive turn because I have my 1 copy of Brush Off in that hand, and I'm playing the 1 copy of Brush Off basically to turn on Twinkle Toes because you need to have an instant that you can play on your opponent's turn to turn on Twinkle Toes. So I draw those two together. I have no arsenal. So basically, because Brush Off is only defensive, I only have a 3-card hand with this Burn Up if I try to play offense with it. So instead, I end up just blocking with Brush Off and a 2-block and my Twinkle Toes. And my hand is some red attack, the 1 for 5, I can't remember its name, that you can discard to prevent 2 damage.
the Trip to Light Fantastic.
Yeah, that one. Trip to Light Fantastic. That's a rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how you could ever forget that one. Trip to Light Fantastic. Easy.
And I so I have that and my Burn Up Shock in hand. And Lucas has the Arcane Cussing in play. And I look at his equipment. He has, I believe he has the Earth Shoes that you can.
Yeah, but he'd never decomposed at all.
Yeah, he had no Earth cards in his Banish Zone. And I look at my Burn Up Shock. I'm like, okay, if I cast Shock for one damage, it'll kill his Arcane Cussing. That'll be 4 points of value out of this. I get an Arsenal, my Trip to Life. Fantastic. That's good enough. Four points of damage. I'll have plenty of time to push through because his Cussing will be dead. He won't be able to use his hand efficiently, probably, because he's Florian with a four card hand. What's he going to do? And so I cast Shock, and Lucas starts thinking. And I hear something, him starts to say something. I thought it was okay. I don't know exactly what he said, but I'm like, great. So you take one and you're casting the story. He's like, no, wait, I'm still thinking. And I'm like, okay. And I wait. And then I look over in his offhand slot, and there is the Rosetta, or the Sanctuary of Aria macro.
Yeah.
Sitting there in play. And I felt so stupid. I felt so dumb because I had just given up the best card in my deck, and he's going to pitch any old card from his hand. Doesn't matter what. Prevent my one damage, and it's going to be really hard to win the game when he is going to be able to basically present a bunch more damage now because he's going to pop the Cussing. He had a Rune Chant in play, so I knew basically if I didn't kill it then, I was going to eat the Rune Chant. It was going to pop his Cussing, and I would take a lot of damage. But I had enough health that I could probably take one hit from that kind of thing and him have the Cussing trigger as long as I have a really good offensive hand on my next turn. But unfortunately, I just used the best offensive tool in my deck to do nothing. So he ends up pitching a yellow, activating the Sanctum and negating the best card in my deck and basically kills me, I think, the turn after the next turn. But yeah. I kind of don't really have much left in me after that point. I throw some attacks at him, but it just wasn't close after that.
Yeah.
So instead, I should have just pitched the Trip the Light Fantastic to attack with my sword for one. I have a card in hand. If it's an instant and he blocks for one with his Earth Hat, then an instant would threaten to kill his Cussing. So I'd probably get a card out of him. I might just get the hat, but either way, that would be a lot better than throwing away the best card in my deck for his Sanctuary of Aria.
True. Oh, well, there's always next time.
So I do think mine and Lucas's decks were probably similar skill. I think he just played better than me, and that's going to happen sometimes when you make pretty big mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well. I think Lucas might be good at Flesh and Blood.
Yeah, he's building up quite a resume for himself, and he's definitely pretty good at the game.
True. So that was a big mistake on your part. Do you want to go through the sealed portion at all, though? Because I have a game where if I make four game-ending punts, I still win the game. But I make five game-ending punts and throw away my second-to-last match and go 4-3 and drop from the calling.
All right, let's talk about it.
It was one of the most embarrassing games of Flesh and Blood I think I've ever played in my whole life. So the format's new. And
not new from last set.
Yeah, not new from the set. I'm trying to think of a synonym for new. How can I not think of a synonym for new?
It's original. I don't
know. That's a good one. We're gonna go with it's an original format. And so we're gonna Tarantino this. I'm gonna start at the end and with my last game ending mistake. So I'm at one life total or two life total. One life total point.
Okay.
And I have two cards in my hand. And I can choose to Arsenal one. I've just taken my opponent's whole hand. I just had a really good turn. I'm playing Aurora. I just had all this super long combat chains. My opponent has no cards left in their hand. So I'm clear to pitch one of these cards or Arsenal one of these cards for my last effect. And I choose to pitch a red Oath of the Arknight and Arsenal blue sigil, not the sigil, the whatchamacallit, The one that it's like gains one life. Or no, it's one red arcane polarity, but I'm at one. Uh-oh. So I have no chance to ever gain four life with this. So, but I think to myself, oh, I don't want my opponent to gain life on my next turn at instant speed by like pitching a fruits and then I just die on the spot. I could play around that by just arsenaling my arcane polarity and then it'll be fine. And then I realize as soon as I put my Oath of the Arcanine on the bottom, I make the realization that Verdance doesn't deal arcane damage to you on your on when it's not her turn. And I was like, I can't believe I did this. So I then go to my next turn and then I rune blade. I basically have like no pressure, no damage, can't do anything. I really wish I had like a red Oath of the Arcanine in my arsenal.
Yeah, that would have been very lucky if you had that in your arsenal.
Yeah, so my opponent blocks with like two cards and then sends a 2/8 or something like that back at me and kills me, and so I lose the game there. But earlier on at the start of the game, I choose to play and I pitch a bunch of Trips of Light Fantastics early on turn zero to say, oh, I'm gonna be able to prevent arcane damage with this later, like I was saying earlier in the episode as well, where I like to pitch them and make sure that I'm going to draw them early in second cycle, because that's when you want to be preventing arcane damage. But basically that then also left me vulnerable through the entire mid game, where I was then just taking a lot of chip damage from, like, my opponent was playing a more arcane, heavier version of Verdance than I was used to at that point. I hadn't really played against one of those yet. So there would have been a lot of instances in the mid game where having my Sanctuary to at least prevent the surge would have actually been really helpful and prevented a lot of life or just made the difference maker. Or if they're, I think at one point they even came with like a blue one that I would have been able to like pitch a two cards in order to deny them the embodiment of Earth that they were setting up as well. So up until that point, I just considered it to be like, oh yeah, on turn zero, just use your Sanctuary, filter your hand. It's just like stupid Helios Mitre or whatever from Uprising.
It was Uprising, sorry.
Yeah. Just filter your hand, whatever. Should not have done that. Then like two turns later, we're I have a good turn one, my opponent turns back. He sends like a 2/8 back to me. I say no blocks, because I learned at that point that if you're a lightning hero, you should not be blocking, because you'll get fatigued if you try to block and go late. And so I look at my hand, I see a card that says Sigil in it, and then I see I have a red Flittering Charge. I'm like, perfect. All right. I attack with my red Flittering Charge. Oh, no. It doesn't have go no. again. Oh man. I hope I have some way to give this go again. It'd be real. Oh, oops. I say this out loud at the table, cause like, I'm just like, I like to joke around sometimes. Uh-huh. And my opponent blocks with one card and I say, okay, I'm going to play my Sigil of Deadwood. And he's like, you don't have an action point. And I look at the card and I'm like, oh yeah, this one's not. So my turn's just over. Just throw away a whole turn cycle. My opponent then goes, gains a bunch of life on their turn. They're actually able to play like a 4-card hand.
I go no blocks, attack with one card pass.
Yeah. So that was bad. And then there were circumstances that these are kind of more minor nitpicky things where like I had the option between attacking with my weapon or making an embodiment of lightning. And I at first was like, always make the embodiment of lightning, set it for your next turn. And then I skewed too hard in the other direction where Yaish was like, oh no, I always want to be attacking with my sword. But it turns out it's nuanced. Do you want to evaluate different situations based on your cards and deck and what the game state's like and what you need to be doing on different turn cycles? So you shouldn't just have a heuristic to always do one thing or the other. So there were turn cycles where I was like, man, actually, if I made an embodiment of lightning on this prior turn cycle, everything works. like this, my stupid red trip, the light fantastic that I arsenaled would have go again right now. And then I could attack with my sword and I'd have a really good turn cycle. But instead I'm just like blocking for four and then attacking with my red trip, the lightning. And then that's my turn. So, mm-hmm.
So you talked about this a little bit. You said lightning heroes, they don't want to be blocking because they get fatigued. And then you said you're blocking for four attack with trip the lightning.
Because so, I don't have action points.
One thing I want to say is, I don't think blocking inherently is what gets the lightning heroes fatigued. I think blocking is fine. I think blocking with two blocks is a very good way to get fatigued, because then True. You take three cards from your deck to do the same thing that two, three blocks do.
True. True. Yeah. I just started 1-2 on the day, and basically I beat a Florian round one, and then I played a Florian and a Verdance in games 2 and 3, and I got them down to one life a piece at, you know, various points in time, because their Earth Heroes are going to gain life back up. They didn't play any bombs. They were just really close, grindy games. But I felt like I just didn't play the early game aggressive enough. I was playing too conservative. And because I wasn't blocking with two blocks. I was still blocking with like three block. And I had some class cards in my deck, like an Oath of the Arknight or something like that. Or yeah.
Hit the high notes one that I like quite a bit in Aurora.
Yeah, even like blue hit the high notes I was blocking with, when I could have like gotten four value out of it instead. But I was like, oh, I can block for three with this. I want to keep my life total high. But four is still better than three, so I should have taken that value. And after I started 1 and 2, it's I kind of clicked in me. Like I said, at first I was making too many embodiments of lightning. I started attacking with my sword basically way more. I started playing the early games way more aggressive. My rounds started ending in like 10 minutes. I was just blasting. And we just went on a rally all the way up until I made 5 gaming ending punts, which was, you know, if only I made 4, I could have maybe day 2.
But oh well. Yeah, that's rough.
Flesh and blood's hard.
That's a lot of game ending punts. Flesh blood is hard.
Turns out when you don't know what any of the cards do, having heuristics for what you think they do is not always good. You should verify the cards do the things you think they do before taking game actions. Might be good.
I think this is something that I've been watching commentary for the tournament, and I watched some of my games, and the commentators commented that I pull a card and read it, and I think I know what these cards do most of the time. I have a pretty good idea. Like, a lot of the time it's cards that I saw in the draft, I read, and then I passed or I played with even. And still, if there's something that I'm like, I want to be sure it works the way I think I do, I'm just going to take one more read. It's a new card. Maybe there's something I'm missing. I just want to read through it one more time. And I think that's just a good habit to get into, unless you absolutely know because you've used the card several times, then reading it is pretty good. Pretty good idea.
I'd write that down, but then I'd have to remember to read the note to remind myself to read. So I'm kind of stuck in a loop, right?
Yeah, it's kind of pointless to even write it down. Though they do say even if you don't refer to the notes at any point, the act of writing something down does help you remember it.
Mm-hmm. Fun fact about me, I've never taken a single note ever in my entire life. In any class that I've ever taken, including law school.
I have not taken a lot of notes in class, but I take notes about like gaming stuff. I take notes about things like that I find important in conversation sometimes. I think notes is just helpful. I've got a little checklist of all the buffs that I use before I go fight bosses in MapleStory, you know? It's a good note.
Notes. Yeah. Maybe I should start taking notes. I should take a note to start taking notes.
You've made show notes before.
Oh, I guess those kind of notes.
They have notes in the name.
I guess I should say in school, I've never taken notes, but I have taken like professional work meeting notes. I've taken like minutes for like professional meetings. Those, I guess, are a type of notes.
You've taken testing notes from our testing meetings.
That's true. I've done that. And I guess maybe this is tangentially school related, but I did like fill up a workbook when I was studying for the LSAT. So that you have to make those diagrams for the stupid logic games. I don't know if those counts as notes. Those probably counts as notes.
Yeah. But you've just never been in a class and just had a notebook ready to go writing things down that the instructor is saying.
Because I always engage with what the instructor's saying. I like listen and ask questions, and like that's how I engage with it. And I feel like taking notes takes me out of that process.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, okay, read cards.
Yep.
Know what they do, and then play the game based on what the cards do instead of what you think they do. That's a good lesson.
That is a great lesson.
Okay. Any other hot tips? Any other great tips for this format, since you are the second best player in the world at the set at the moment?
So one thing that I think is really important is figuring out your sideboard strategies into the different heroes. I think one thing that was giving me a lot of equity all weekend basically was pretty early on. I think you want to have, against the Runeblades, you want a lot of three blocks because they are going to be attacking you a lot. You're going to get lots of opportunities to block for three. Against the Wizards, you want things that you can do if they just zap you. If they just play a zap, maybe it's against Verdant, she might staff zap you, she might zap you, she might staff zap and then zap you again. And against Acilio, he might just zap, he might block with a few cards and zap you, or he might play like one attack and you can block with one card and then he zaps you, boost it up. So you just want to basically have like some random cards that are good against, good if you get stuck with a four card hand. Like I think the Earth Auras are fine for this, both Strong Yield and Harvest Season, I think is its name, are both great. Oath of the Arknight's another good one where you can play Oath. Oath actually is great against both heroes because it's a three block when you need a three block, and it's something with go again when you are stuck with extra cards to spend.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I remember you also talked about in your top eight match, you had this card called Brush Off in it. And I remember showing you a pool of mine at one point, and you're like, I don't like this red Brush Off card. You shouldn't play red Brush Off. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like I want something for zaps. And you're like, Brush Off sucks. But now I hear you saying you want cards that are good for zaps, and you have a Brush Off in your deck. So was I right? Was I right about the Brush Off?
So I actually don't think Brush Off is a good answer for zaps. The problem is if they amp one and then zap you, then your Brush Off has no text. That's pretty bad.
That's not true.
If they amp one and zap you for four, your Brush Off doesn't do anything.
You can still play your Brush Off and then play your shoes and cover it up, assuming you have Twinkle Toes.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you don't have an instant that you want to play on your opponent's turn for Twinkle Toes, I think Brush Off is good enough. I would not play two copies of it, but just having one to turn on your Twinkle Toes.
Yeah, I had one copy of Red Brush Off in order to like help cover up arcane damage against the Wizards.
I have learned since our conversation. I think with Twinkle Toes specifically, I think Brush Off is very good, very solid. Okay.
All right.
Maybe okay, very good. Cool.
I'm just making sure that I want to listen to you, you know? I want to make sure that you, since you know more, you're the second best player, that I'm still following your advice, because I don't want to assume that I know things since I 4-3'd. Arcane Polarity, that's a gas card. How high is that in like your like pick rankings overall?
I think it's pretty good. I was very happy with it in Sealed and Draft. I never ended up with any because they weren't getting to me. People were taking them very highly, I think.
Yeah, even the yellow one's good, right?
I actually had the yellow one in one of my draft decks, and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I do think that you want to be able to sideboard them out against Aurora because she's not going to do that much arcane damage to you. She doesn't really care about making rune chants. Burn Up Shock is one thing that turns it on, but if she's playing Burn Up Shock, you want a hand of 4 or 3 blocks so that you can block and try to not take the burn up part of the Burn Up Shock.
Yeah, I was laughing because in my 5 punt match, in one turn cycle, my opponent goes, you're not really dealing a lot of arcane damage. And so I'm just going to play this card, gain my 1 life. He plays red Arcane Polarity. And I was like, oh, cool. We got a red Arcane Polarity out of his deck. And then I draw, what's like the 0 for 3 that makes the rune chant when it attacks?
Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, I draw a red Hocus Pocus, but I have an embodiment of lightning. I'm like, aha! And I play a red Hocus Pocus. I swing my sword. He takes one arcane and he plays a second red. I was like, come on. So, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. I do think sometimes it's turned on against Aurora, but she definitely does the least amount of arcane damage out of all the heroes.
100%. What about count your blessings? Is this even a playable card?
So I don't think you should be counting your blessings in Limited. There aren't good discard outlets for it outside of Acilio. And the problem with Acilio is if you're playing all these defensive cards, you're at risk of getting fatigued. I think it is an okay sideboard card if you need something for the Wizards and you really just don't have things with Gogan. It's an instant, so it kind of has that go again. So the red, you can spend two resources and a card to gain three life, which is never great, but it's fine. It's better than doing nothing with your action point, you know, yeah. with your extra cards. Like if you're going to intellect penalty too, you'd much rather have a count your blessings. That said, I never saw a draft where someone got enough of it to like really like be doing the thing where you're casting your third or fourth count your blessings and then you're like really.
I was about to say, I think you want four before it becomes worth it, and that seems like it's hard to do.
Yeah, it does have a full cycle and it is a rare, and I think it's a pretty low pick in most people's pick order. But in my six drafts, the most I ever saw myself having the opportunity to get was three in one draft, and that was only if I picked them before like 12th pick, which I don't think you should be doing.
Sure. That makes sense. What if you get called to the grave with it? You know, you can call to the grave, count your blessings, set up this combo.
Yeah, I haven't found a use for call to the grave yet. I just don't think one exists in this limited format, but if it does, I surely have not found it. I think on maybe the best upside is on turn zero, you can play it and put an earth card in your discard pile for you to decompose later. But yeah. Then a lot of the Earth heroes really care about cards in deck. They don't really want to spend two cards from their deck to get 0 points of value, because then there's risk of getting fatigued because the Earth heroes don't have a lot of evasion. I think Verdance has fine evasion. She can play a bunch of zaps with her staff, but Florian really struggles with evasion. And despite having a weapon, Florian is also frequently susceptible to getting fatigued. I think a lot of games against Aurora, actually, Florian can get fatigued if he's blocking a little too aggressively.
You know what you should do with it, Michael? What you do, okay? Check out this combo. You go and you get... Oh, it only puts actions. Okay, so what you do is you go and you get any action out of your deck with Call to the Grave. You put it in your graveyard. Then you play Save the Thought and then shuffle the actions back into your deck so you get value out of that card. And then you create a ponder token. You basically almost demonstrated a loop there, right?
So you're spending multiple cards and casting. You're spending multiple cards to essentially do nothing, right? You're putting cards into your discard from your deck and then putting cards from your discard back into your deck. You have done nothing. Congratulations.
You don't like your three card nothing play? You get a ponder token.
I do not like three card nothing.
Technically four, because you have to pitch for Save the Thought.
Well, I mean, Call of the Grave only takes one card.
True. Yeah.
So it is a three card make a ponder.
Okay. You know, it's right next to Call of the Grave on the spoiler, though. What might be one of my favorite new cards of all time.
What?
10 foot tall and bulletproof. The 3/10 power, 10 defense. When this attacks or defends, your hero gets -2 intellect during your next end phase. This card's hilarious. This card's sick.
Yeah, I also am not sure exactly how to maximize this card because you don't really want to be attacking with it unless you're killing them because
it's a pitch deck card.
It's a red though, but losing 2 intellect is a very big cost compared to just playing like a Raging Onslaught or whatever Raging Onslaught equivalent of 2-card 7 where you don't lose 2 intellect. You lose 3 value, but you get +2 intellect. It's not a trade you want to make. If you get the opportunity to block for 10 with this because your opponent somehow pumped an attack up for 10, up to 10, that's great because normally you're spending this one card plus two other cards to block. Plus giving up 2 other cards to get 10 points of value on defense. Normally, if you block with 3 cards, that's 9 points of value. So that's great if you can actually block for 10 with this. And even blocking for 8 or 9 is probably good enough, especially if fatigue matters.
Yeah, for sure. I that's the first case that you said is kind of the use case that popped up in my mind. It's just wait till your opponent's like low in an end game, and then you just pop off this bad boy. Mm-hmm. Seems like a good use of it.
If you're down to two or three cards in deck, the intellect penalty doesn't actually matter anymore because you exactly. just draw the only cards left. You just have to pitch it two or three times to get there.
Yeah.
That's all.
Easy. What about the red ones that destroy an instant action or non-attack action? These cards are kind of whatever, right?
So I actually think these cards are pretty solid. I think the 1 for 5 that destroys an attack action, that one's on pretty often. A lot of the time people are going to be arsenaling their extra attack actions that they don't want to play. They're going to arsenal their lightning surges and the lightning heroes. They're going to arsenal their second 3 for 7 that blocks two when they have two of them. They're going to play one arsenal one. I think that has a pretty relevant on hit. The problem with a 1 for 5 is it's pretty hard to have a curve that really works with where you really want to play a one cost at the end of it.
Right.
Because you need to play two costs worth of things with go again, basically, to really efficiently use a blue pitch. And that's what you want to be doing, is efficiently using blue pitches. I think the 3 for 7 tongue tied, it doesn't really have an on hit. Like, it does. You get to see their arsenal if they have an arsenal. And if it's an instant, you get to get it. But most instants, they can just play.
Yeah.
But there's a couple that it's relevant against. For example, the lightning one that is gives your next attack +3 that costs one or less. And there's some sigils that they wouldn't want to play. They'd want to wait till their turn to play it. Because, for example, Acilio wants to get the buff from his, or the discount on his staff. Mm. But that said, the effect doesn't matter that much. It's a 3 for 7 that blocks two, which is plenty good enough to put in most decks. You just 3 for 7, bam, hit him.
Yeah, for sure.
The 2 for 6, I think, is probably the worst one because it has the same issues with the one cost where there's not a lot of turns where you have two resources floating. I think Aurora actually likes this card quite a bit because a lot of times she can lead with a 0 cost with go again. That's a lightning card, attack with her sword, and then end on this. I think that's the most natural play pattern that fits this card. But I think it should be a little bit of a lower pick than the other two. And also, non-attack actions aren't super common in their arsenal. I think their attacks are the most likely to be there. Non-attacks are probably the second most likely, and then instants are the least likely. And then the instants also, they can play them out in response. But I think this card is definitely worse than the 3 for 7. But I'm pretty happy to have it in my Aurora deck.
Okay. That's fair. All right. Any other callouts you want to make? Any cards you want to talk about in the set?
Oh, it's the rare that enters with 3 verse counters. And when you attack with it, when you play an attack action, you remove a verse counter from it to create a Runechant token.
Malefic Incantation.
Yeah. I think this card is very, very good and should be a high pick. I think both Aurora and Florian are quite happy to have it. It means that if you have this card, then your things that care about playing or creating an aura are turned on for several turns. So like hit the high point and Florian's weapon if you're attacking with go again attacks. And the swarm, rune ravage swarm or something. It's a 0 for 3.
It's basically a new swarming gloom veil at home.
Yeah, which I think that card's quite good if you have ways to enable it.
I think it'll see constructed play, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, if you want more than 3 copies of Swarming Gloomveil, this card is definitely worse than Swarming Gloomveil, but it's very close to Swarming Gloomveil.
Yeah, which says a lot. Yeah. What about, so red, obviously, love it. What about yellow and blue, though?
I think the blue is not great. It's a blue and it has go again. So against the wizard, you can play a blue to get your 1 point of value out of it. So it's not the worst. I think the yellow is a solid sideboard card for wizards where, like I said, you want cards that say go again. You can get 2 points out of a value out of it. If you're a Florian deck that's really good at decomposing, it's definitely worth playing. If you are either Runeblade that has a lot of things that care about auras entering this turn, not just Rotwood Reaper, but you really need some of those cards we talked about, then I think the yellow is fine. And then the red, I think, is just quite good.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. I think that's all I have to say about cards for right now. Definitely a lot to learn still. Excited to draft a lot more. Want to make sure I'm good at this format for Osaka because I am tired of having limited be the weakest portion of my game. I think it has by far consistently been the weakest portion of my game so far in the history of all of my tier four events. I think I'm like one in two, or maybe I think maybe I have like two or three draft wins before missed U.S. Nationals. And even at U.S. Nationals, I went 3-3, which isn't great. No, that's not true. I went 1-2. Yeah, 1-2 and then 2-1, so 3-3. And that was my best, you know, draft result. If we look back to the Tokyo Calling, I scrubbed the Tokyo Calling 0-2 drop. I made top 8 of the Battle Hardened after I learned, but instantly lost there after drafting what I consider to be one of the worst draft. If it's possible to draft a worse Zen deck than I had there, I guess my day one Zen draft deck at U.S. Nationals was also quite bad. Either way, I drafted a really bad Zen deck. If we look back to Heavy Hitters, that world premiere, I got by stupid Miller's Grindstone being in my pool. And they're like, oh, how bad can Victor be? You don't even know how bad Victor can be, dude. I know how bad Victor can be. He's unplayable in that format. And so that went horrible for me. 0-2 drop there. So a limit, it's been the bane of my existence in competitive play for a while here.
Yeah. Funny, though, I think that if they had made the 30 card limit, I think Victor would have actually been a lot better in that format.
I agree. True.
But that didn't exist back then. People could sideboard their 38 cards against Victor, and then you just like...
people play like 42 cards against me sometimes. They're like, oh yeah, I only have one card I can't play. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. What are you going to
do? Makes sense. So I do think that we actually... you made day two of the Arena Open in the Magic tournament, and we did a draft together for your day two draft. And I realized that we approach draft very, very differently, just in general, fundamentally. And I think that maybe doing some two-headed giant drafts, basically, where we work together and talk through drafts, I think could be pretty good practice for both of us and helpful to kind of maybe learn some things from each other.
Yeah. You were like, take the three color mythic frog. And I was like, I just want to take this grizzly bear with upside. You're like, no, take the three color frog. And I was like, oh, okay. And then we wind up not even playing the three color frog, I was saying.
Well, we didn't wind up not playing the three color frog.
There's nothing we could have done.
In the next pack, it was a three color frog. And in the next pack, there was a very good blue rare. And one of the three colors were blue. And the frog was blue, green, and black. And then you see this white two drop that's notably worse than the blue rare. And you just are like, we're taking this thing. And I'm like, no, we should take the blue card. It's better than this thing. And it goes
blue's
with our first
so
pick.
Bad. I actually think blue's gotten better in my evaluation since then. But at the time, I thought blue was unplayably bad. But that's not that bad. It's just pretty bad.
I think draft is self-correcting that nothing's ever, well, I shouldn't say nothing's ever unplayably bad, but it has to be really, really bad before it's unplayable. And when there's rares that are like powerful, and it's hard for something to be unplayably bad when it has really powerful rares. If you get those rares, then you can probably make it work.
Fair enough.
And that's why I like Aurora when I have Burn Up Shock. I mean, no, I actually think Aurora is fine, but Burn Up Shock is very, very good.
Okay. We got a lot of work to do in draft. We got a lot of work to do in class constructed, but looking forward to it.
One more talking point before we sign off. So actually, we didn't talk about the equipment at all in this format. I think the equipment's a pretty important thing to talk about.
We touched on it where we said Twinkle Toes was really good. The Earth shoes are really good. Like all the shoes are really good, except for the generic ones. I can't remember what they're called, but no, not those, because whatever the shoes are called, it's a horrible name. I can't remember what it's called. It's like the worst name you could ever think of, especially like if you're going to name your team after like those kinds of shoes. I would never do that. That's just cringe. But those shoes are really bad. But so you really want Twinkle Toes and you really want Well-Grounded and your equipment slot, I think.
I think those shoes are good. Runaways are good.
Or I guess the Runaways beat you in the final.
They did. They had two in the top 8 also. I played against Michael Dalton and he beat me in Swiss. He's very good.
Yeah.
But I think that all the Runaway style equipment, where if you've taken damage, you can sacrifice it for round one. I think they're so much better in this format than they were in Tales of Aria, because almost every hero is going to be hitting you multiple times for multiple sources of damage. Even Verdant's is going to a lot of the time heal and then heal and deal arcane and also hit you with some other sources of damage.
That's fair. I think they're the worst against the Earth Heroes, though, just because on so many of the turn cycles, they are just chunking you. So it can be hard to get value there. But yeah, in end games, you can find ways to get value out of them for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty rare for a Florian never to make a rune chant against you. So a lot of the time they make a rune chant, you can't prevent the rune chant damage, and then you get to cash them in. But it can be kind of awkward if they attack you with, like, maybe they attack you, or they have a rune chant in play and they attack you with a 2 for 6 and you have 2-3 blocks you want to block with, and you also have like 2 pieces of runaway equipment. A lot of the time you just take the rune chant block with the 2-3 blocks and hope you find another spot. And if that was your only chance to use them, then it's kind of sad.
For sure.
But yeah, I think they're very good. I think the best one, I think, is the chest slot one, because I think the chests are the most
for sure
replaceable ones. I think that the rune blade chest, you have to sacrifice a hole or a permanent to get a resource. And the wizard one, you can get a resource out of it if you have a sigil. And I think the wizard chest one's pretty good in Acilio, but a lot of my Verdant decks just don't really want sigils. The Earth Sigil is also worse than the Lightning Sigil, and yeah, none of the sigils are really that impressive.
It's also harder for Verdants to just make use of just like that extra one resource, right? Like Lightning.
That's true too.
Like you could amp with it with Volzor, you can cast like a stupid one drop lightning card, but Earth, since her weapon costs 3 and so many Earth cards are just so chunky, it's harder to get like value out of just one spare resource here or there.
Yeah, I think like if you do have it, I think Sigil of Fyandal is a card that you might bump up in your pick order a little bit, and then you might want like one or two of the one cost arcane damage spells, so yeah, you can like
play it. Importantly, at the start of your turn with the sigil trigger on the stack, you can sack it.
Yeah, you can, and then you can use the chest to pay for the one cost spell, which is solid. I think the gloves, I actually think the gloves are really, really good, both the wizard ones and the runeblade ones. Making the rune chant can turn on cards like the Swarming Loomba at home that I don't remember the name of, hit the high note, and it can also push the arcane damage for the 2 for 5 that gets +2 if you've dealt arcane damage. Arcane Spike, I think, is its name.
Yeah, Arcanic Spike.
Arcanic Spike, yeah. And because of that, I really like the Runeblade gloves, and especially in Aurora, who really likes having two cost things, then you can happily play an Arcanic Spike when you have the Runeblade gloves. And if you don't have the Runeblade gloves, it's pretty hard to turn on the Arcanic Spike. So it's true, a lot rougher then. And then the hats, I think the Lightning Hat, it has all this text about discarding a lightning card to bounce a sigil back to your hand. Unless you have Sigil of Brilliance, most of the time it's just a blade break one, and the text on it can come up, and it's okay in Acilio at times, but I think overall it is much closer to just a blade break one hat than it probably seems, and the amount of times you're using it, a lot of the time it is fairly low impact. Like I'd say reasonably less than a point of value of impact.
Sure. I think at its ceiling is it's basically a deep blue that blocks for one.
Yeah, you can
cash in. Yeah, like if you have a bricked all red hand, and yep, since all the sigils are blue, you could just discard one of your lightning ones or pick up your blue sigil and it can unlock. I've had that come up quite a few times.
That makes sense. But yeah, and the Earth Hat is very, very good. If you need to, you can block one with it to turn on Decompose, because you need to put another Earth card in your discard. That comes up a decent amount. And then if you don't need to, then you get 2 block out of your hat, which is also great. So both sides of the Earth Hat are amazing. I think the Earth Hat is probably the best equipment in the set.
I think I would agree. I think I'd go Earth Hat and then Twinkle Toes.
Okay. Yeah, I think Twinkle Toes, you do have to really consider, like you do have to make sure you get a way to enable it. But
yeah,
I think it is pretty powerful. I think Well Ground is also really good once you turn it on, being right, able to stop the amped up arcane damage to stop them from getting the surge effects is great, and also being able to stop arcane damage from like rune chants to stop them from turning on their arcanic spike or whatever is also very good.
Yeah, I think I'd go Earth Hat, Lightning Greaves, not Lightning Greaves, that's the legendary one, Earth Hat, Twinkle Toes, Well Grounded, probably the Arms, Flash of Brilliance, all of the prevent one effects, and then the class chests.
Yeah, were you saying both arms there? Because the Runeblade one and the Wizard one are both
yeah,
very similar, where they're one damage that also has their like yeah, upside synergy for the class.
Yeah. I think they're better than the prevent ones.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, for sure, because they turn on some synergies. Yeah. But
I actually think second thought effects.
Yeah, I think the prevent one chest, like I said, I think it's the best one because the chests are all not great.
Yeah. Okay. And now I'm looking at all of them. I'm like, bruised leather. Who would have thought bruised leather? You just want some of that on your chest.
Yeah, even in my first draft in day two of the calling, I actually had the sigil chest in my Verdant's deck, and it was pick three or pick four of pack three. I saw a bruised leather and I took it over a fairly reasonable card. I don't remember what it was, but I was quite happy to just like upgrade my chest. And that was more important than just getting another playable for me.
That's fair. Okay. Any final thoughts?
This format's sweet. I'm excited to draft it at Osaka. I think I have a lot to learn before then still.
Same. Well, the next time you are learning how to play the limited format of Rosetta in the latest Flesh and Blood set, Rosetta, where people are drafting cards from the Flesh and Blood set, Rosetta, always remember, mind your manners. Thanks for watching.